Hello, my name is Lisa Elvin Stoltore, and this is my channel, Have Roots, Real Travel. I'm a genealogist and a passionate traveler. Most of my videos will be about travel or understanding various locations, but in this special series, I'm focusing on a part of Quebec Canadian history that is near and dear to my heart, the story of the Filles du Roi, or the King's Daughters. In this series, I'll be focusing on individual biographies so that we can really get to know as many of these amazing women as we can. Please let me know in the comments below if there's one Filles du Roi in particular you are interested in, and I'll try to move her to the front of the line. And please don't forget to subscribe to the channel, click on the notifications alert, and like this video. All of the above helps me out. So let's get started, shall we? So let's begin by looking at Les Filles du Roi, the program, which began in 1663 under the tutelage of Jean Talon. And I have produced a video, and it's on my channel, called The Program 2.0. And basically, it goes into depth as to the recruiting process, how the girls were selected, where they were from, what life was like when they first arrived, all the ins and outs of the program. I would urge you strongly to look at that video just to give you a sense of what each of these individual people went through, because we start at their own individual biographies and we don't really delve into the program per se. So I would urge you to have a look at that. So with that being said, let us look at the next lady that we're going to be featuring. Her name is Marie-Reine Charpentier, and she is not one of my grandmother. She actually is a grandmother of my best friend, actually. And so we're related by marriage yet again. And so it is, she has such a compelling story. I can't wait to tell you about it. So with that being said, let us get to know Marie-Reine Charpentier. Now, Marie-Reine Charpentier was born in 1659 in the parish of Saint-Sulpice in the city of Paris, France. Her father's name was Bonaventure Charpentier, and her mother's name was Isabelle de Sens. Now, she was born in the 6th arrondissement, as we know, the 6e arrondissement of Paris, which has long been known for its cultural and its artistic flair, if you will. This arrondissement is also called Luxembourg in reference to the seat of the Senate and its garden, and is situated on the rive gauche of the river Seine. It's funny because one of my favorite fragrances was the rive gauche by Yves Saint Laurent. So note to self. It also includes world famous educational institutions such as the École Nationale Supérieure des Beaux-Arts, the École des Hautes Études, Sciences Sociales, and the Institut de France, as well as, you know, a really big concentration of Paris's most famous monuments, which includes the Odeon Theatre of Europe, Le Pont des Arts, which links the 1st and the 6th arrondissement over the Seine. You have the Saint-Germain Abbey and the Saint-Sulpice Church that we'll talk about in a minute. This very, very central arrondissement, which includes the very historic, because there are faubourgs or neighborhoods in it, Saint-Germain-des-Prés, and also Luxembourg, as we've talked about, which surrounds the palace, and has played a major, major role in Paris history, and obviously is well known for the Café Culture and the revolutionary intellectualism that, think about Jean-Paul Sartre and François Séguin. It's hosted really, really amazing thinkers and artists in its time. And everything about it is very focused on the beautification of not only things, but ideas. And so this is a kind of area, because in Marie-Reine's time, it would have been very close to the palace. It would have been something that the people around it would have been very concerned with, not only the royalty, but also but also ideas and things of that nature. Now, the church that she would have been born into, Saint-Sulpice, is obviously a Roman Catholic church, and it's on the east side. Of course, it's still, this is it standing today, and it's on the east side of Place Saint-Sulpice in the Latin Quarter of that arrondissement, the sixth arrondissement. It's only slightly smaller than Notre Dame, and thus is the second largest city, or the second largest church in the city. It's dedicated to Sulpicius the Pious. Construction of this church began in 1646. It was obviously built by the time she was born, so it would have been the new old church. It dates back from probably, I want to say, like the 13th century. And then they rebuilt that church. It was dedicated, the Queen of Anne of Austria is actually who put down the first stone. And in 1646, she was the one that laid down the cornerstone of the church. And we're going to talk a little bit more about Queen Anne in a minute. But so this is the kind of environment that Marie-Reine would have been born into. Now, who was her father and why was she called Reine? Well, she was called the Reine because her father was the master tailor to the queen. And the first queen he would have been a tailor to would have been Queen Anne of Austria, the one who put the cornerstone in the church. Who was also the wife of Louis XIII and, of course, the mother of Louis XIV. When Louis XIV was of age, he married Marie Therese, Queen Mary Therese of Spain in 1660. Although I have not confirmed which queen or if it was both, logic tells me that when Marie was born and he would have been working with Queen Anne, and she was named Reine in honor of the queen, so he would have been working with the existing queen at the time. She was the queen mother, if you will. Also, it's not terribly important to what we are talking about in terms of the Fille du Roi, but this Queen Anne is the Queen Anne that who is the one written about in the famous book, The Three Musketeers. So I just think that's really cool. All these tidbits of history, you know. So what happens? Like, I mean, here is Marie-Reine born into this, you know, in the sixth arrondissement. It's very cultural, the palace, all that. Well, her father passes away. And I don't know what happened to her mom, but obviously, for whatever reason, and this is just amazing to me, she was recruited for Les Filles du Roi, and at the very tender age of 13, she crossed the ocean to brave a new world. She arrived on the boat, the Jean-Baptiste, on August 15, 1671. She's the first girl we're studying who's actually arrived on this particular ship. By now, the program was well over 8 years old, the Fille du Roi, the program. And there are less and less girls arriving. And they did tend to be, at this point, from Paris and its surroundings. Although she arrived at such a young age, she was not without resources. She arrived with goods worth about 400 pounds, which in today's dollars is close to $100,000. So she had money. She was extraordinarily young, one of the youngest, if not the youngest. I think this is the youngest we've seen so far. So let's see what happens to her. So the man that eventually she selects is named, or selects her, we don't know the full thing of it, but his name is Louis Bresson. And he's born in 1639, making him 20 years older than her. His parents were Jean Bresson and Marie Griffot. And he arrived in Canada sometime around the 1665. And we're not sure, but we know that we find him in the census in 1667. So he's around, he's working, he's probably come in as, he's not a soldier, he's an engagé, as we call it. And we later find out that he's a tailor. So I don't know if he came across as a tailor, and then I don't know the full story of that, but I know eventually he becomes a tailor. And he's from a part of France, very close to La Rochelle, which where the ships will be leaving, called Erte. And actually, the Cardinal Richelieu spent time on a farm just south of Erte. So it does have that kind of claim to fame. The Saint-Étienne d'Erte church dates from the 10th century, but it's undergone so many transformations, especially in the course of the 19th century when the building undergoes profound changes. So the way it looks now in this picture is not obviously how it looked when Louis would have been living there. Now, one thing we do know, as I've said, the fact that he is a tailor, he's working for Etienne Blanchon by the time of the 1667 census. And so the fact that Etienne was a tailor, just like Marie Reims' father was a tailor, I don't know. It's a coincidence. I'm not sure. So let's find out when they married. So Marie Reine marries Louis Princeau in Quebec City. She was also given a king's gift, but her gift was not the 50 pounds, but rather 100 pounds. A lot of times, the more noble the girl, the higher the price on her was. It's almost not nice. She's worth more because she's from nobility. It's also interesting to know that she arrived in New France in August of 1670, but was not married until 1672. So I suspect her young age has something to do with it, as most girls we have seen were married within the first few months. The only other Fille du Roi we have studied who waited that long was Anne Lamott, but her prospective groom was busy being a notary and signing the Indian Peace Treaty, so he was slightly different reason. So I suspect they took her, it was the usually the nuns who took care of the girls that came across, and probably said, she's not ready, she's scared. We're not sure, but we know that by the time she would have been 15 years old by the time, so some she would have. Perhaps celebrating her 14th birthday and then crossed into 15 years of age. So she was 15 years old, marrying a 35-year-old gentleman. A very challenging situation to be sure, but as we will see, she was up to the challenge. Now, the tiny community of Saint-Augustin de Démare is where they eventually settle. So you can see the Saint-Augustin is just south of Quebec City. It looks farther away than it really is. And it's also interesting to note that 17 Fille du Roi eventually settled here. Very amazing little town. We'll obviously be returning here. This is the first time that we are actually visiting this particular town. And this postcard I got just gives you an idea of what the town looked. This is way further than when the period of time that we're studying, but just give you an idea. In 1647, let's look at a little bit of the history. Jean Juchereau, the Lord of the Mar, is given the seigneurie that includes this very small village. By 1668, the territory begins to be occupied. It was then called De Mar. By 1671, and remember she got married in 1672, a community mill was established at Lake Saint Augustine by the son of the original lord, also named Jean Juchereau, this time de La Ferté. By 1685, Paul Augustin Juchereau de Mar becomes the third seigneur of this community. The name of the parish must obviously comes from this the name from this name of this Paul, and so this is how a lot of these seigneuries ended up having their names, depending on who was the last lord and the seigneur and all of that. And so it's an evolution. So when you're going through the records, always be aware of the seigneury, trying to get a little bit of an information on it, so you can be kind of get to know the story, because understanding locations becomes very paramount in trying to research and trying to document things. Now, How did the family evolve? Marie-Reine and Louis would have three children, three girls. Their names are Marie-Anne, Marie-Jeanne, and Marie-Madeleine. Marie-Anne married first Jean-Baptiste Gendron and had 13 children, 11 of whom made it to adulthood. By the way, Jean-Baptiste Gendron was the son of Marie Charpentier, who we just looked at in video number 30, and that's what got me interested in Marie Reine and trying to figure out how she fits in. Marie-Jeanne marries Louis Gresnon de la Violette and has four children, two of whom reach adulthood, before she herself passes away at age 26, probably in childbirth. Marie Madeleine marries Pierre Jean and also has 13 children, 10 of whom make it to adulthood. Just an astonishing amount of children from three children. Now, let's look at what happens next. Louis Bresseau dies between 1680 and 1681. By July 16, 1681, a contract was drawn up between the widowed Marie Reine and a man named Etienne Domingo dit Carabi. You will know that our beloved Marie Reine is now a mere 22 years old, a widow with three young daughters. Just astonishing. Her new husband, Etienne, is 50 years old, even older than her first husband. He's born in 1632. What about this name? It doesn't sound too French to me. This is where a quick check on where he's from tells us everything we need to know. Well, just about. He was born in Bayonne, which is in the department of Pyrénées-Atlantiques in the Nouvelle-Aquitaine region of southwestern France. If you will look at the circle that I've drawn, you'll see where Spain is and where he's from. So the odds are he was a Spaniard who lived in France, or his close ancestors were from Spain. So essentially he's French Spanish, you know. We don't know very much about him, but what we do know is that they call him a bargeman. So that means he was a man of the sea. We don't know exactly what his business was, but we do know that Marie-Reine ends up kind of signing for him. He's away at sea a lot, she just kind of took over and was in charge, even though she's just 22 years old. And they actually end up moving to Quebec City because obviously he needs to be near the water, near where the sea is happening. And so she was living in a small parish in Saint-Augustin, and I don't know how she met up with this fellow. I mean, it's almost like there was no match.com back then, right? So how did she meet him? It's a mystery. It's a total mystery to me. Possibly another fille du roi intervened, met this man. You know, they're very interconnected, and obviously the fact that she was so young still, she needed someone to take care of her and to take care of her financially. And even though she did have money, and she did have, back then, you know, women did not have the power that they do to some degree today. So this is her new husband, Etienne. So she goes to Quebec City and settles down with a new husband with her three daughters. And so Etienne and Marie-Reine were married on August 26, 1681 in Quebec City in that chapel. And she is now, this is her new life. Let's have a look. Let's review a little bit about Quebec City. I always love to pick these particular images because they really are images of buildings that would have existed at the same time as Etienne and Marie-Reine would have been in Quebec City. They lived in the lower part of Quebec City, they certainly would have traveled to market and that sort of thing. Let's review a little bit about the current Quebec City. It is the capital of the province of Quebec. 500,000 people live in Quebec City to this day. Quebec was originally named by the Algonquins, who named the area Quebec, K-E-B-E-C, which in their native language meant where the river narrows. Quebec City lies where the St. Lawrence River narrows. Samuel de Champlain founded a French settlement here in 1608 and called it Ville de Quebec, Quebec City. The city walls which surround it still date back to this time period, making Quebec City the only city with remaining city walls north of Mexico in North America. There's so much to see in Quebec City. Let's start by the upper left-hand corner here. We've got Maison Jacquet. This house is the oldest surviving private residence in Quebec. It dates from 1675. And if you'd like to tour it, it is home to a famous restaurant called appropriately Aux Anciens Canadiens, roughly translated to our old Canadians or to our historic Canadians. Amazing. The Auberge Place d'Armes, which is on the bottom left of your screen, dates from 1620 and was built for one of the pioneers of New France, Guillaume Couillard. So it was more of a commercial building. A wonderful restaurant called Bistro 1640 is found on the first floor. The Auberge des Beaux-Arts Hotel occupies the upper two floors as well. Now, on the upper right side of your screen is part of the what they call Le Petit Champlain, which is kind of the oldest shopping district in North America, actually. And so the cobblestone streets and all of that is just part of the charm. That's what Quebec City is renowned for. It truly is an old place. If you want to go to feel a little bit of Europe, that's where you need to go. The history of the breakneck staircase. Let me talk to you a little bit about on the bottom middle of your screen. You will see these stairs, these amazing looking stairs. And what happened is in 1620, Samuel Champlain, the founder of Quebec City, decided to build his home at the top of what was known as Cape Diamant. He decided to, he drew a road, and obviously there were stairs, and these stairs followed that route that we have to then. And a path was then created to bypass the steep incline. And the French colonial authorities then had stairs and landings built. And then the structure stood all that time until about, and it was called the Champlain Stairs. Until about 1893, the wooden staircase was replaced by a larger iron one with these with three banisters. And then the one in place today dates from about the late 60s. And it was at this time that it became known as the breakneck staircase. And in French, it's called l'escalier casse-cou, which means break your neck, a term coined by British tour guides. No serious injuries have ever been reported on these stairs, despite their ominous name. And then last but not least, we have the Ursuline Monastery of Quebec. The Monastère des Ursulines de Québec is what it's called in French, was founded by a missionary group of Ursuline nuns in 1639 under the leadership of Mother Marie of the Incarnation. And it's the oldest institution of learning for women in North America. Today, the monastery serves as a general mother house of the Ursuline sister of the Canadian Union, but the community there also operates in a historical museum and continues to serve as a teaching center. So amazing history. You can see, I mean, even though when we study Europe and we look at how old, you know, things are there, Quebec City definitely, although not as old, gives us a taste of what it's like to have buildings that are 400 or 500 years old. So now, what's happening with Étienne and Marie-Rey? Well, they're busy. Even though he's at sea, obviously he comes home enough, and they have five children. So she has Elisabeth, who gets married to Gilles Gaudreau and has 10 children, five of whom make it to adulthood. With her second husband, Pierre Leblanc, she has one more son who makes it to adulthood. Then we have Louise Angélique, who marries Guillaume Chauvel and has two children, twin girls, who both make it to adulthood. With her second husband, Jacques Cordero, she has one child who also makes it to adulthood. Marie marries Antoine Sibelier, and she has 14 children, 11 of whom make it to adulthood. Marie-Geneviève marries François Caron, and they have 12 children, six of whom make it to adulthood. Unfortunately, Marie-Reine's last child, Barb, dies at the tender age of three. Now, what's next for our beloved Marie-Reine? On the 28th of December, 1702, Marie is made a widow once again with the death of Étienne. He is buried at the Basilique Cathédrale Notre-Dame de Québec, where they were married. She is now 44 years of age. Now, we have to at least say she had 20 years with this fellow. So that was definitely better than their first husband. And so she's 44 years old. She's got, you know, approximately at this point, seven children in different phases of growth. So what's next? Well, it appears that she would live another 26 years, this time as a single adult. She did not remarry. I wonder sometimes if these were her best years. She was finally free. She wasn't a daughter. She wasn't, you know, indebted to any man. There's evidence that she was truly a woman of good business sense from the contract she signed for herself. And it appears that toward the end of her life, she may have gone to live with her oldest daughter, Elisabeth, one of her daughters. I don't know if it's her oldest, but she did die on January 25th, 1728, at almost 70 years of age, and was buried at the Notre Dame Cathedral in Montreal, in the ancient cimetière, that L'Ancien Cimetière, which would eventually become the Basilica de Montréal, de Notre-Dame. There's a plaque there that states that these people were buried there. She had been living with Elizabeth for probably about a few years. That is kind of what we're thinking. And her daughter Elizabeth was a widow, and she herself passed away a mere 4 years later and was also buried in the cemetery. Before we leave this remarkable woman, let's review her life. Born into at least the upper class of Paris, named for a queen, losing her husband, her father, and possibly her mother as well at the age of 13, shipped off to New France and married at approximately 15, a widow and a mother of three by the age of 22, a widow and a mother of seven by the age of 44. By the time she died, she had eight children, she had had eight children, and had 66 grandchildren. A true woman of substance is our beautiful Marie-Reine Charpentier, truly a testament to what women can accomplish and what they did accomplish. Even with all the obstacles that she had, she managed to persevere. And that we thank her for. And with that, we end another chapter of our study of the King's Daughters. We will explore number 32 shortly. I wonder who it will be. Until then, au revoir.